This podcast is brought to you by Shout Engine. In less than 5 minutes, you can start your own podcast for free with ShoutEngine.com.
That's funny because I always thought that the best race car livery would be like a shark. The bottom half would look like terrain.
Track, yeah,
the top half would be the sky.
Yeah,
yeah. And then your headlights would resemble a different class of car. You could switch them to confuse the other drivers.
Well, Bill Caswell did his Lemons car, and he painted the left half black and the right half white.
Oh.
And so you wouldn't really notice it during the day, but in the night races, you know, marshals on the inside of the track would report a black BMW leaving, and marshals on the outside of the track would report a white BMW leaving.
Bill is simultaneously the dumbest and the smartest person
That's
I know.
Fantastic.
All right, are we rolling?
We're rolling.
Oh, have we been rolling?
Just a little bit.
Oh, good. I'm glad. No. We rolled in. It's the Smoking Tire
That's
podcast.
Great.
I feel like doing like an old Western intro.
Are we really going to use the voice?
We're going to use the Black Boyle voice. Maybe we should take this podcast, Alex Roy, who's in the house.
Hey, guys.
To explain the Black Boyle. No.
Is this the one?
Is this the one where Black Boyle finally becomes a thing?
This is kind of like The Ring. It's like the movie The Ring, but for stories.
So Alex Roy is in the house.
Hey, guys.
We all know who he is. We don't have to do this whole fucking dancey dance thing we do. I like doing podcasts. We were saying before earlier that, like, it's nice to have, like, you know, important guests and shit on that we have to interview, but like it's really just way more fun when your friends are just here. That's just better. So what's up, buddy?
And I've been listening to the Jocko Willink podcast. You know Jocko?
No.
You guys didn't know they heard of this
what?
Guy?
No.
So he's this Navy SEAL. And if you look at a Google Jocko podcast, he got.
Oh, I think he just did Rogan a little while
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, he did. And he's done like Tim Ferriss.
Let's see what he looks like.
He's ex Navy SEAL. He looks like a piece of meat, had like eyes and a lips painted onto it. And
yeah, he's like, oh my God.
Yeah, that's such a good description of him.
And
that is exactly what he looks like. If you took a steak and put a face on it.
He's like if Randy Couture and Henry Rollins fucked. That's what he looks like.
And I got to tell you, this guy's podcast, he's a motivational speaker. Most of the podcasts are interviews with military veterans, and they're really, really well done. But once he went really deep and did like a whole thing about this book called The Rape of Nanking, and like went really deep into like, you know, World War II history, and this is, the guy's funny because his voice on the podcast, he sounds like, you know, he's like, you would not believe the pain and misery. And like, I wasn't entirely sure if that was his real voice or not. And after, but it, there's occasionally short spells where he has like a really like a softer side. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of obsessed with Jocko because I think this guy is in on the joke. He's both serious and funny. And I think there's a lot more going on. And if you're looking for another podcast to listen to besides Smoking Tire, check out Jocko. I wish there was a Jocko for automotive. You would not believe the pain of an endurance race with Jack Baruth.
We attempted to do a Baruth Brothers podcast for a while.
I'm sure that
would
go over.
I mean, it was the single most degenerate fucking podcast that there ever was.
It went downhill quickly.
Oh, no, not when they appeared on our show. I'm talking about the shit that I recorded with them in their hotel room. It was like, oh my God.
I went cross country
in my car.
In your Lexus with Jack Baruth. A lot of people don't like Jack Baruth. I actually like Jack Baruth.
I love him.
He's
hilarious.
One of the most brilliant writers of our time, even if you disagree with him.
Probably the best writer working today,
I think so. Yeah, I think so.
I just raced with him, his team, American Endurance Racing. Which is, in my opinion, the best of the cheap racing series right now. It's also the most real of the cheap racing series. Like, the cars are the least shitboxy. The drivers are, for the most part, more talented than you see in Lemons or Chump. There are fewer cars by two-thirds than in a Lemons race. And we won.
Yeah, I saw that.
At New Jersey Motorsports.
That's amazing, by the way. Mazel.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
We fucking won, dude.
Because last time you guys broke and all that stuff, and then I was blown away checking Instagram, and it's like, we won. I was like, get the fuck out of here.
Last time you were here, you were talking about committing a B&E to finish the race.
Well, this race we mm-hmm. won was the first AER race we finished in 2017.
Be honest, Matt, how much of the driving did you do?
In the race we won? More than you would think. Now, look, I will proudly say that I am the slowest member of our team.
Oh, that's fine.
However, I'm not the slowest by much. I'm about a half at... And New Jersey Motorsports Park, well, we had some fucking shoes, first off, this race. So the team, the drivers was me, Jack, Larry Webster of Road and Track.
That's serious.
And formerly of Road and Track, excuse me, now of Haggerty. And this dude, Jesse Lazar. Jesse Lazar is a 20-year-old Canadian racing driver who earlier this year won the 24 Hours of Daytona.
What?
The GT class.
What was he doing in your car?
Exactly. Well, as a partnership Jack is doing with IMSA, Jack reviewed Jesse's McLaren race car, which is, I think, the cover
this month
or last month.
Yeah, it was very good.
Right. And the funny thing about Jesse is he's 20. He had, until about a month ago, he'd never driven a manual transmission.
What?
Ever. All his race cars, he went from karts to very fast cars.
That'd be like faulting somebody for going, I've never dialed a rotary. It just doesn't exist.
It's like
Rocco
Zaffredi's new co-partner saying, I've never fucked before.
So he had never he'd never driven stick until very recently. Jack taught him to drive stick, and he'd never raced a three-pedal car ever.
Wow.
So at NJMP, I was running like 141s. Jack was about a half a second faster than me. Larry was about a second and a half faster than Jack. And Jesse was a second and a half faster than Larry. So we did pretty well. To answer your original question, I drove the first stint and the last stint. Everyone did a double.
Mm-hmm.
Did two stints in that race. I drove the first and the last stints.
Cool.
So I took the start, which I had never taken a start before in a real race.
What kind of car was it?
MX-5 Cup.
Do they do rolling starts?
But some of these people, some teams, our strategy was not to put the fast guy in the start. We had a different strategy. Most teams, their strategy is to put the fastest, most aggressive driver they have in at the start, which I think is a mistake. But they were so some of these people drive the fucking start like it's a sprint race. Like they're diving turn one. It's like, holy shit, this race is 9 fucking hours long. You don't need to pass that car.
Let attrition set in and
forget
weed the field out a little bit.
Make a pass three corners up. Who gives a fuck? Yeah. And what are you doing? You could put your whole... This is a team sport. This isn't sprint racing. We have a team of like 12 people.
Well, interesting is talking to some of the like Le Mans drivers we've interviewed with Tangent and stuff is as cars have gotten more and more reliable, mm-hmm. and GT racing especially,
yes.
it has turned into a long sprint race.
At the 24 Hours of Le Mans or Daytona, yeah, it absolutely has. When you're talking about a $12,000 race car, being fucking maintained by two Serbian brothers who get paid in bacon, egg, and cheese sandwiches, it is not a 12-hour sprint race. It is definitely an endurance race. So I took the start, which was really exciting. I have video. Really exciting. I will put video up.
Do you have hot sauce? Oh, man, they didn't have hot sauce. Oh, we don't have brake fluid. It's weird.
Dude, Bozy and Boyan and Josh, they got it done, dude. We had the night, practice day was Friday. The car did 3 laps in practice and then pissed coolant everywhere. An O-ring went bad. These motherfuckers had to pull the motor to fix this O-ring the night before the race. All-nightered it, pulled the motor, got the car running, ran the race. We won the race.
Do you know what O-ring was that they had to pull the whole motor?
There's something... It's not... It's like... There's a coolant line that goes into the back of the head, and to get at it, they didn't pull the motor up. They had to drop the subframe, and
it was more about room.
It was about room.
I was just watching Drift Garage Season 2, and they're fixing Sam Nelvin's car, and they were talking about how on 240s, there's some bolts at the top of the transmission where you can't get them off unless you like drop the motor and the trans.
Yeah.
And I think Ryan Turk said he just stopped using those bolts and just cranked the rest of them down, because if you have to change a part, it's better to just do that than have to undo all those things like you guys had to do.
So that's what it was. But, The race was awesome. It's a 9-hour race. It's a very long race.
How long?
9 hours.
It's not long. What are you talking?
It's a long race when you're in the race. you're talking about when you don't have a trailer
chair.
You're just kind of like outside in the paddock. Like, you know, it wasn't even like our last race where I brought an RV. Like, no RV.
But how'd you get down there?
I fucking flew to New Jersey.
Yeah, I understand aircraft.
Audi got me a press car. I drove an A5.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you went down there in the A5 and... I've been to that place.
JMP, yeah.
So you're just hanging out in the pits?
Yeah.
That sucks.
It was rough. That's what racing is. But
well, actually, no, it isn't.
No, not normal. Normally, racing is a bit more luxurious.
What do you mean, those gentleman racers? I was at with TRG up at race. And TRG, they had a buffet, massages.
That's what a $50,000 weekend.
It's like velvet ball bags.
This is what a $1,000 weekend looks like. You know. But
isn't it amazing how racing is sold as like a glamorous sport?
Oh, it's not.
It's almost all of it is like sub Uber driving.
Yeah.
You know what? You're right. That is like the first thing that existed where it's purely the highlight reel that the public sees.
Yeah.
You know, even back in like 1920, mm-hmm. you get the newspaper thing. It's a guy with champagne and girls around, and he's the man.
Yeah.
And and now on Facebook, we all just put up our highlights of our lives.
Yeah.
And that was like no one sees the tarmac that you're sitting on with your Coleman chair.
It's real grimy. It's really dirty. And it's really exhausting, and you eat terrible food, especially in New Jersey. You know,
especially there.
Especially at a racetrack in New Jersey.
That specific to the town where that's located is
Millville really has its own charms.
Yeah, yes.
And by that I mean it has none yeah. charms.
There is an antique store there that sells a lot of taxidermy and like old jukeboxes. You've seen that place?
I woodworking. Think I know what you're talking about. On High Street, probably.
Yeah, with the High Street. This is what we should discuss. Worst racetrack towns in America. We've never done that.
Monticello is hard.
Chuckwalla. Chuckwalla has general store.
Yeah, it's got nothing.
Chuckwalla's
a desert.
It has one general store.
Is it
within
a store which
miles?
Has empty shelves? Because that's always
sure.
Yeah, empty shelf store. Like always, like you know.
This the one store near Chuckwalla is a terrible store.
It sold a sandwich that you kindly brought to Lee Keen because he wouldn't eat what we had, and he looked at it and was like, "I'm good."
Yeah,
I didn't eat anything all day.
I mean, what's Willows? Well, Willows has like a Target and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And
Willow Springs is pretty terrible.
Thunderhill. Yeah.
Oh, Thunderhill. Yeah. No,
so Willows.
Willows is not that bad. Willow Springs in Rosamond is pretty shit. There's like two restaurants that are passable there.
Mm.
Actually, so Millville's pretty
Millville might be, is it? The Monticello might be worse, though.
Monticello's worse than Millville, for sure.
Yeah.
Monticello is a terrible, terrible,
terrible
town.
Place.
Monticello really is Elysium above the planet Earth.
Yeah.
Like, you go outside the gates.
So is Thermal.
Oh, really?
That's Palm Springs, though.
Yeah, but it's like 30 miles from
Palm Springs. It's not 30 miles. Yeah.
It's 30 miles from
But it's 30 fast miles with interstate,
yeah,
as opposed
but
to...
it's still 30 miles.
As opposed to, you know, like, you know...
But Thermal's lovely.
Yeah.
There's Buttonwillow is in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Although if you go though to Thermal and you enter like the back way and drive around like the perimeter mm-hmm. of Thermal on the outside, and all you see the concrete walls and signage facing inward, and it's a little bit like in the end of the movie Brazil when the guy's driving down the highway and like it's just nuclear wasteland but walls to mimic civilization right alongside. But if you're across the other side of that wall, it's like Mega City 1 Judge Dredd, like wasteland.
More like The Village, M. Night
Shyamalan.
Oh,
yeah, it's just
the Village.
Like The Village.
It's all inside.
I mean...
So anyway, we won that race, which was killer.
Fantastic.
Killer. And then immediately we got bumped up to the next class for the next race, which is just as well. I got to take the start again. The start was even fucking crazier. People were like... having no control over their cars for the first lap. It was like oversteer, understeer, like all over the place and hitting the dirt and madness. People fucking banging into each other. And then it turns out that our Daytona winning friend, you know, he doesn't know how to like rev match or
I was going to ask that question.
And five laps in, the clutch went, go fuck yourself. And the clutch pedal went to the floor and did not come back. And I had to like jam the car into fourth gear, and I limped it around the rest of the track, and that was the end of
our day. Was he not rev matching whatsoever?
No.
Remember when we had the BMW guy on here, the British dude, and he said he had never rev matched, and his clutch lasted forever.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah,
how's that possible?
I mean, It's all. I'm not entirely blaming Jesse. The clutch. This car has been gone through very extensively while Jack has had it. According to him, the clutch is like the last thing on the car that they didn't touch.
Mm-hmm.
So it was fine when I drove the car in the winning day, and the second I got in it, even creeping through the paddock the next morning, I was like, oh, this thing is fucked.
So wait, you guys had two different races over the weekend?
AER is two 9-hour races.
Oh, I thought they were combined into one.
No, it's two races.
Isn't
one
of the principals of the organization? Mark Baruth?
No, he ran their like social media for a while, but I don't know if he's doing that. He didn't do it for this.
So I'd like to see a race of champions between like the AER winner, the Lemons winner, the Chump winner.
The people who win Lemons are usually pretty fast, but Lemons is more expensive to enter.
Mm-hmm.
It's much more of a shit show, and the driving is much, much worse than an AER. And you don't get to lap. Like, it's like driving.
Yeah. You're going to Lemons for more than just the racing, though. You're going for the spectacle of it.
Actually, Lemons
to see a certain kind of people and you know
the jokes. Yeah.
I don't find it all that funny. I like
you know why
Jay and I like Phil and I like the guys who run it, but like, there's nothing to me that's interesting about putting in the level of effort you need to put in to win a race like that, and then having it also be silly. You know what I mean?
Oh, well, that's why the cars that are really fast there tend to not be that funny.
Right.
Like, the Camaro is, like, that's the most artistically decorated race car there, and it just has devil horns on top, and it's fast as fuck. But the rest of them are, like, E30s.
Oh, the IROC Maiden?
Yeah, that thing. You know, and it hauls ass. Really
that or the major penalty GTO that went around for fucking years.
Yeah. Who was the guys who had their car was, in fact, looked like a trailer with a hitch on the front?
Well, Speedy Cop. I don't know his name.
Like a trailer.
Yeah, it was a camper.
Okay,
Speedy Cop is the craziest builder that there is.
Uh-huh.
So he has raced an airplane, the Spirit of Lemons,
which an upside an down F body
put onto a Toyota van chassis.
Uh-huh.
The upside down Camaro, which is where he took one Camaro and flipped the fucking body over, so it's driving around upside down, which is amazing.
Nice.
And then he did the camper, and his new one is a hot dog cart.
That's great.
So there's some pretty impressive comedy builds, but like, I just assume race cars that look like fucking cars.
All right, so you've been down the pike of developing TV shows for years. You've done pilots.
Yeah.
Why hasn't there been a Lemons TV show?
Nobody has executed it properly. TV shows need like really good characters, and
aren't good characters.
Not really,
dude. No. Imagine the legal hurdles of trying to get all those fucking everybody just, to sign off on everything.
They tried so many times. I talked to Johnny Lieberman and Phil and Jay about it, and they said people have tried and it's come out terrible every time, and it's because you need a consistent cast. You know what I mean? You'd need, like, you could maybe do a show about, and I've never met Speedy Cop in person, but you could do a show about him much easier than you could do a show about Lemons as a whole thing. It's like too big of a fucking thing.
And even with him, it would almost be like a Monster Garage single episode.
Exactly.
So then, you know, it'd have to be, each episode would have to be like one team building
you'd
a weird thing,
you'd end up with
maybe.
Monster Garage, basically. Yeah, yeah. But AER is awesome. The people who organize it are great. I mean, I definitely saw some shit driving, but more good driving than bad driving for sure.
So, all right. So walk our audience through this. If you want to go do AER, what are the real costs associated with it?
The real costs. All right. Well, you need a race car, obviously. You can race basically any car. Now, it has to look like the fucking car. Like, you know, you can't have... It can't be one of Speedy Cop's like trailers. You know what I mean? It has to resemble the car that came out of the factory, right? So the most popular cars are like E30s and E36 BMWs are super popular.
Is there a value cap?
No, but there are multiple classes. There's five. You can race a current World Challenge car in AER. You're in class 5. You're in the fastest class.
And what do you find in class 5 there?
Class 5 is going to be $250,000 E46 M3s, Caymans, Corvettes, CTSV race cars, E92 M3 race cars, current or like 1 year old IMSA Mustangs, fucking race cars, fast,
all
proper
on the field
race cars.
The same time same as time. The shit boxes.
Yeah, the shit boxes are not that shitty.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're not like you can get a car that's like a chump car. probably into lemons, and you'll be or into AR, and you'll be like class one or two probably. So there's like some E34-5 series, lots of E30s and E36s, NA Miata, NA NB and C Miatas.
So cars that might look rough but are mechanically perfectly fine.
Yeah. Most of the cars are decently quick. There are very few cars that I would refer to as the rolling chicanes. Not many. One team that they all worked at Subaru this past race were the first team to ever finish an AER race in a Subaru. And it was the slowest, worst car. That car was a team rolling chicane. It was so slow, but they did finish a race in Subaru.
What was it, just a WRX?
No, Legacy 2.5. Fucking shitbox was terrible. But most of the cars, like, are reasonably quick and look reasonably good.
What was the time difference? So when you the first race you guys won, and you were class one, and then you went...
We were class two, then, which is the second slowest class. So class one was like, there was like a couple like 80s Hondas, like CRXs and Civics from the 80s, and then that shitty Subaru, and then like 1.6 liter Miatas, like those small motor Miatas. Like those are class one. And then class two is like 1.8 liter Miatas, E30s, let's see, what else would be class two? The NB Miatas were class two.
Maybe like Civics?
There was a couple of other... Oh, there was like a Jetta 1.8T that was faster than you would expect. There was a class two. And then class three is mostly E36 M3s. And there was like a Saab 9.3.
And that's what you got moved into?
We got bumped into that. Okay. Yeah. We got out like...
You say a Saab 9.3?
Yeah. Like a 2003 Saab 9.3 sedan. We would be outmotored by most of the class 3 cars. And we, if we ran our race right, could win class 2. We really couldn't win class 3.
Okay.
It would be almost impossible.
Okay.
Especially because our car... most of the cars can run 90 minutes on a tank of fuel. We can run 75 to 82 minutes. We have a smaller tank. So we had to do an extra pit stop compared to everybody else. And then class 4 is E46 M3s and in some cases, like, slower live-axle Mustang, like Grand Am cars from, like, 4 years ago. And then
Boxers, maybe?
Caymans, E92 M3s, current-gen Mustangs, Corvettes, CTSVs are class 5.
Damn.
There's fucking fast cars. Damn. There's like a 20-second-a-lap differential between a class 1 and a class 5 car. In the bigger tracks, like at Road Atlanta, when we were racing at Road Atlanta, in that long back straight that goes into the chicane, the 90-degree chicane, we would, in the Miata, I'd be hitting about 120 there. There was a Vette and an E92 M3 that were hitting almost 180 miles an hour on that straight.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I'd have to imagine. If you get like a Vette or a Mustang going down there, it's just like, oh, well, I'm nothing.
Dude, the closing speeds were crazy.
Were there any wrecks?
Yes, there are definitely wrecks. A Mustang took out an E92 M3 at such an unbelievable speed, it cartwheeled into the fucking Armco. Nobody got hurt, but it was a big crash. There was a couple of big crashes. There were Larry Webster in our car. He, going down the front straight, he was going to get passed by another faster Miata. And the car wasn't even that faster, but the driver was being super aggressive. And so Larry moved over and gave this driver lots of room, but the guy still went for, like, the dive bomb braking. Larry had to turn. He took the outside line into turn one. This driver just locked the brakes, fucking spun out, and, like, ass-punted Larry into the fucking thing. For 20 minutes on the radio, I was manning the radio. For 20 minutes on the radio, all Larry would say is, I want that guy's name. I want that guy's name. We got his name.
And the car was okay? Like,
car was okay, dude. It was the luckiest punt ever. Like, there was, like, a dent the size of, like, a baseball glove.
What were the consequences of that? I mean, are there real stewardship?
Required to run a video camera in your car as a requirement. And if you are involved in contact, they then, at the end of the race, summon your video and they review the contact. And you can. There is no financial penalty. You're not going to be required to pay for someone else's car.
Is there no penalty in that moment? Like,
You can definitely get black flagged. And they have a really ingenious system of texting everyone So, like, everyone in the race will get a text that says, like, in addition to the guy, you know, they'll throw a flag, obviously, but, like, it'll be like, car number 42 has been black flagged for avoidable contact or whatever. So, like, if you get a black flag, like, you don't get, unlike lemons, in lemons you get black flagged for dropping a wheel in the dirt. Mm-hmm. That shit doesn't happen here. If you go four off, you get a black flag. But if you put two off, there's no flag. And if you have, like a rub, there's no flag. Like, if you're going down the straight or something, there's a rub, there's no flag for that.
How many flags did Jack Baruth get?
Our team ran clean. We got zero flags. Oh, no, we got one flag for someone had a visor up while fueling. That's so we had a pit violation flag. Your first two flags you get talking to. Your third flag you get a drive-through penalty. Your fourth flag, they park you in your pit for 2 minutes. And then your fifth flag, you're done.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a team next to us that had zero control over their vehicle. I'm talking about zero car control. Now, I don't know if it was the car. I don't know if it was the driver. Whatever it was, I talked to them. They were very nice people. I have nothing ill to say about them as people. But their driver had zero control over their vehicle.
No matter who the driver was.
I don't know how many drivers they had. But every time I saw this car on track, they had no control over their vehicle.
Because you need a certain level of either schooling or experience to drive in AER, correct?
I got the impression that at least one of their drivers was reasonably talented. You need to either have like a racing license, multiple racing schools completed. You need to have or raced in like three chump races or four chump races to get. Yeah.
Well, now that Skip Barber has gone bankrupt, it'll be a lot harder to go.
That's a good segue too, because JF was going to go to the advanced class there, and I was looking to do one of those classes up in Monterey, and the school was already gone in Monterey. The Skippy MX5 school that used to be there for years was no longer on the website, because I want to do the schooling just for my own benefit, and then to eventually do chump and da 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 da. And it's like you have to go find a school to do it so that you are so it's safe for everybody.
Schooling is really good when it comes to basic racecraft and like car control. But like for you, like I feel like you pretty much have like car control.
Well, but I think the advanced Skippy school, when you leave, you get an SCCA license because they do.
You get a Skippy license. There's a whole different school if you actually want an SCCA.
Okay. Because then they do actual hot lapping. Because you need it, like the speed differentials you're talking about. You don't want to learn about that on race day.
No,
like,
honestly, dude, that all comes from just not being a fucking moron and looking in your mirror all the time. You know, and like I'm a much more conservative. Like that. Like I'm the slowest guy on our team. But I bring that car back looking exactly like it looked when I took it out.
I'm the same way.
I'm not touching nobody. If it comes down to letting someone by, like, I'm well aware of the fact that I'm only racing people in my class. Like, there are big colored stickers. So, like, I can see in the guy's mirror if he's coming up, oh, that's a class four. Like, I give him a fucking point by in the race. I move over, give him a point by. Like, I don't give a fuck. And if I see someone with a two, I'll race that person.
Yeah.
If they're on my lap. They might not even be on my lap, you know?
Were there people there who knew it was you and who you were, who wanted to beat you?
It wasn't like that. There were a lot of very nice fans. Some people gave me some shit. Definitely when we were gritting up at the start, people were talking. People were like, see, that's the famous guy over there. Make sure you take him out in turn one. They were giving some shit. But once you're in the car, no one didn't know anything. Mm-hmm. But
not since you went on your diet.
Yeah. they fucking widened the tunnel so I could fit fatter, and now I lost some weight.
I remember that from...
widened the tunnel.
I remember that from Lemons, though, like looking in the rearview mirror, because that was my first lesson of wheel-to-wheel. And you look back and see, like, the Iron Maiden Camaro and the other cars, you just move over. You're like, what am I going to try to do here?
Yeah, when the car is really fast, you know, you can... If you're in a slower car and you're being... You can pretty much stay on the racing line and they'll work around you.
Yeah.
You know, you just be aware that they're there and don't track out into
right.
them.
Don't change anything.
I think if you have common sense and situational awareness and the ability to control your car, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, it's nobody wants to crash into you. You know what I mean?
No, of course.
I don't see how this is any different than any discussion of just driving regularly. Just be aware of what's going on around you.
Yeah.
How come no one's done an organized race that includes a paintball battle on track while in... No, really, because you think that that's the next stage.
I think it's a great idea.
It's a natural... Like the XFL. What's the XFL of driving?
Yeah.
You know...
Demolition derby?
Turrets. Like, yeah. Turrets, absolutely.
Actually, turrets.
Yeah, like laser tag or... Are you talking about actual weaponry?
We want the paint.
You need two driver. You need a driver and a turret operator using remote control operating paintball turret. That would be the shit.
That would be sweet.
Car Wars. It's Car Wars.
That would be awesome.
What was that?
So
Twisted Metal? Was that the video game?
Yes.
Twisted Metal, yeah.
There you
go. I feel like... Did Top Gear do that? The paintballing one?
Yeah.
They definitely did. Sort of, yeah.
I remember seeing a paintball.
And then they did that shitty segment with Sabina Schmidt last year. With the lasers.
Yeah. The lasers aren't as fun as the paintball.
Paintball's better.
Yeah. Like, laser tag is not as fun as paintball.
True. But it's not, you know, I think there's... I've learned a lot more by actually just getting in the car and racing than I did by going to the school. But, going to the school is helpful, for sure. But...
I understand.
You know,
totally.
Being in the race and, like, being... But from my last race to this race... I felt a lot more comfortable being really close to other cars. Much more comfortable. Like, every time I do it, I get much more comfortable and less nervous being close to other cars.
Speaking of comfortable, Skip Barber owes Lime Rock Park $1.2 million and has $10 million in debt.
So, that you can buy them out for $1.2 million. Yeah, Skippy going bankrupt. That's the biggest racing school in the world.
Well,
right?
Actually, it's between $10 and $50 million in liabilities. For what?
God, who do they own? These huge credit card bills. They might owe rent to racetracks if they don't owe their buildings. I mean, they might owe people salaries. You know, who knows how long
that's probably their biggest is. They probably get some settlements and some salaries.
Yeah,
wow, dude, that sucks.
They owe $240,000 to Road Atlanta, $170,000 to Laguna Seca, $112,000 to Mid Ohio, $105,000 to Palm Beach.
Fuck, we should have taken their shocks.
That really sucks.
So they're not paying their rent on their buildings. Yeah. That's pretty much it. Or they're not.
Oh, by the way, here. This is the best line of the article. They claim a value of $2 million for the brand name and training techniques.
For their,
yeah.
I could see that. That's not. I don't think that's unreasonable. Do you? For their operations manual and the rights to their brand.
If they're handing you a whole school, like that, that's valuable for sure.
Yeah.
You have a built-in client base, and then you have the average
their mailing list is
car and driver, road and track reader that goes, oh, Skip Barber, I know that.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone who knows sports cars knows the name Skip Barber.
Mm-hmm.
Skip Barber himself was not very nice to me on the one occasion.
He hasn't been involved in several years, apparently.
I know. Yeah. He was. This was as of 2006. That was the last time I met him. He was old as fuck and grumpy.
It's unfortunate. I mean, this whole universe we exist in, like tuners... car builders, everything is like
these people make money.
It's really hard to make a profit long term, and I mean this shit's expensive, and people don't want to pay a ton of money for it or can't.
And even when I talk with like Pat Bondurant, like they have a really hard time making money, and they've got
they've owned that property since the '60s,
right.
And they got one.
Yeah,
you know how they would make a lot of money is if cars were sold. You had to get a certain level of license just to buy a street car based on its power and performance.
I have been for that. I think the cars are so much faster than the average drivers can handle right now that I would be for that. I 100% would be for it. And even if it meant I had to jump through an extra hoop, I'd still be for it.
Yeah, I agree. Well, you know, in France, you get your driver's license. Your first license, you put a sticker on the back of your car with a max speed you're allowed to drive, which is like 110 kilometers an hour.
Yeah.
And then later, you graduate to like 130.
Wow. I mean, dude, just watching people who call themselves racers, you know, on the track this past weekend, and it's like there are people there that cannot control an E30, you know, but they can... They probably have enough money to buy a GT4 or a McLaren or something. Racing, cheap racing is a fucking expensive thing to do.
You know who would be the number one biggest lobby against such licensing?
the people who sports, can afford
the car manufacturers, because they need to move AMGs and McLarens and the you know the kits.
Yeah, that's true.
And so,
bro,
you know what that'd be? That would be like stricter gun law. Same thing.
Yeah.
Well, the industry would resist it because it reduces sales. I'm saying.
Right, but of course, gun ownership. It is a right.
I'm not trying to go into that discussion.
Isn't it shocking that more people don't stuff? I mean, stuff McLarens.
They do.
I mean, I know a lot do, but it's not more.
Beautiful video that went up today of a brand new R8 just getting crashed immediately after being purchased.
Really?
Yeah.
They're getting stuff. Dude, 40,000 people die every year in this country.
No, but I mean...
Oh, how many sports cars?
Yeah.
That's a great idea. We should get an intern to do the math. How many McLarens are sold? How many get wrapped? I mean, literally wrapped.
And how many... The other question would be on that is, how many are quietly done so that it doesn't hit the insurance,
right,
and so that nobody knows about their embarrassment of they just ruined their brand new Ferrari?
Right.
I mean, traction control. Last week, I watched a guy in a new GT3 take a right right next to my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. He had a bad day. He's going aggressive, and he went from a stop, right-hand turn, and I watched the back step out 2 inches and then catch itself.
Yeah.
It was like, now, that's why those cars were Widowmakers 20 years ago, because if he didn't have traction, that guy would have looped his car into the bus on Overland.
Yeah, last week I was visiting Leno's shop, and there was a bunch of kids there going to go get their first tour. A couple, like, influencer kids.
I was one of those people.
Yeah. Kids.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, young people, mm-hmm. you know. And there were these two really nice kids who are like a big, I guess, influencer audience, not automotive. And I gave one of them a ride. Nicest kid. I mean, I really like these guys. And he was saying that he really knew nothing about cars, but he was really into, and I quote, safe weaving. I'm like, what's safe weaving? He's like, you know, I just get bored when I'm driving, so I like to weave.
I'm like, what?
He's like, yeah, but safe. You're like, I'm into safe weave. Like, that's not like
that's
a term.
A thing.
That's not a thing. That's a threat.
Yeah,
that's like a threat. You're threatening me. And yeah, he couldn't be talked out of it. And he's like, I heard about what you did. That's really cool. What do you think? I'm like, I think there's weaving and then safety. You know, but you know, it's like I'm into like no condom Tijuana visits. I'm into like Bangkok bottoming, you know, but safe, you know.
I'm into dipping my ATM card into machines in Nigeria,
yeah.
you know, but
or
it's
Thailand.
Totally okay. Yeah. Or Thailand where I actually got ripped off.
I'm into gloveless falconry. Yeah. That's what I think is a great idea.
Yeah.
Me?
I
like to pick up my heroin in Haiti.
Oh yeah. I'm into unicycle jousting. How about you?
That actually sounds like a great YouTube series.
What?
That's fucking hilarious. I'd love to see what his videos look like.
Yeah. I don't want to name him because he was really nice.
I really like Molotov basketball. It's good. Molotov.
No, you take the fire. No, you take it.
Fucking hell.
That's
Molotov. That's like playing not Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat. Oh, Haruken.
What sucks is if that becomes a trend, especially if this guy has a lot of followers and then other people do it and someone hits somebody and then it's like that gets blamed on the auto universe, not on the idiot universe.
Yeah.
Who was this idiot?
I don't know. I wouldn't blow
he's
up the
sweet
spot.
Kid.
He's,
you
know, he's like, weaving safely.
Might be listening.
Yeah.
I'm of the opinion that if you do stupid things,
you know, look, he's doing
you're game to be publicly shamed for them.
I don't. Yeah. I forgot his name.
How was Leno's garage?
You've been there.
It's amazing.
I have. It's lovely.
It's lovely.
It's great.
It's amazing.
He added new fun things.
Yeah, he added a new room. He added a new room this year that's just full of like 1920s motorcycles that I didn't recognize. What?
It was really cool.
Yeah, it was just like, you know, probably 15 bikes in one of those giant big wing that was all new wood and stuff. And that was really cool, restoring things.
Jeez,
it's amazing.
Cool.
It's
actually, the coolest thing about it was seeing him give that tour for the 4,000th time and keep it together and not like bring a gun.
That's like, dude, you know what that is? What you just described is me doing my how to do drive-by speech to my one-take people.
Uh-huh.
Twice a week for the last 2 years, where I have the same jokes and the same timing, and God forbid someone does one and then comes back with a different car, their whole shit is ruined because they hear me do the thing verbatim again.
This is what it's like to be a Universal Studios tour guide.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. That's all you're doing now.
But I do give. I mean, he knows every nut and bolt of every
car in
there. In there, so I give him credit.
He hand polished. Yeah. He has like a new 1889 fire engine.
Yeah,
that was converted from horse drawn to engine, like in 1905.
Oh, I saw that thing.
There's right, really
it's
cool.
Awesome.
And he has it has this giant, giant stainless steel tank on it that looks like a huge urn for ashes that he hand polished himself from, like, using his new metal polish.
But it was safe.
How are his products?
Is
it called Jay Leno's product? The whole reason you guys were there was for, like, car care.
Jay Leno's car care.
It's called Jay Leno's car care.
Yeah.
Who's making this stuff?
His guys work with a chemist, so they make it.
Oh, really?
It's not white label.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like, they kind of...
100% pure chin juice.
Over, like, over 10 years, you know, they try this, they don't like it, they try this, they like it, they do all these different things.
That's like what Larry did.
Yeah, you know, it's very, very similar.
Oh, all right.
So Jay...
I give Larry a huge credit because his branding, like, the look, feel of, like, the branding of... ammo,
yeah,
it's cool. It's not, I don't even give a shit what's in the bottle. It makes me feel like I'm part of something special.
That's true.
He spends a lot of time on that. Yeah. He's fucking not fucking. I mean, a lot of the car care stuff is really that. Put your lawn chair behind your Bel Air.
Yeah,
fucking polish your chrome cheese ball shit.
Like, I've considered doing a Pulitzer line of anything because I'm a whore for a long time, and yet amazingly I have not. But if I was going to do it, I'd want it to look like Larry's bottles.
Larry's bottles, you know, look like fucking spy gear.
Yeah, really cool.
Yeah, it's very good.
Larry's branding across the board is on point. Everything.
It's the shiniest thing I've ever seen.
His Porsche looks hot. Yeah.
He's gonna clear bra the whole car, which I've never heard of before.
Oh,
but
yeah,
it makes
that
perfect
happened.
Sense.
No, that
I just hadn't heard of it.
There are some people in Seattle whose names escape. Wait, I have to look right now because they're friends of Batim's, and they want to clear wrap my Fox body. And I told them that I think that will be impossible because of the over fenders and the rivets and all of this shit. And God, I can't. They didn't email me. I'm sorry. Now, we'll figure out who it is. But they want. They say they can do it. They say it's going to take 2 weeks, and they're going to wrap the whole thing. I'm like, all right, but
be
we'll
cool.
Yeah.
I have a great idea. Why don't you tell them you've got a new car? It's a brown Citroen. We send it up there, and then it comes back. You decide, I sent you the wrong car. Speaking of tour guides,
wait till you see the fabric I just got for my interior trim on the Fox body. Well, it looks like fucking Audrey Hepburn's lawn furniture. It is crazy. It looks like some Turkish fucking outdoor couch. I got the most obnoxious, hilarious, bizarre fabric from that place John Ward told me about, and it showed up, and in person it looks even crazier and stupid.
Is it the nutty one you saw the picture?
The nutty one I showed you. Wow. I actually bought this shit.
It's like a comic book.
Dude, you can't take your... It looks like a comic book.
Like a Liechtenstein painting?
Yeah. It's crazy looking. It's going to be so funny.
Done. It is the opposite of the exterior of the car.
I like that.
The exterior is like serious race car. The inside is like.
The interior is like, hello.
The interior is going to look like fucking baby elephant walk, basically.
You know, I always thought when you go to like, not that I ever go to a store where you buy baby stuff, because it's creepy because I don't have kids. But you ever see like kids like racing in themed blankets and like bed sheets?
Yeah.
Like, dude, I love that shit. Like. Like the blankets, the pillows. Like, as an adult, I want that, but it would be creepy and weird for
like,
a girlfriend came over.
Like little race car.
Like, why can't I have like pants that just have race cars and shit on them? And
you definitely can.
You can.
The internet can get.
Why
you
is your couch upholstered in Jeff Gordon?
Dude, yeah, go to the fabric district in LA, and they have like a section of, you know, are you a young person that wants sheets? And it's baseballs and race cars. Cool. And all
you
like
can
that.
Also from this site I have, you can order like 80s automotive fabric. You could have a whole comforter
like,
made of like
Porsche,
Recaro,
Pasha.
Porsche, Pasha
cool.
shit. Yeah.
Yeah. You've seen all those dads that build their kids like the super crazy like bunk beds look like AT-ATs.
Yeah.
And like, you know, I'm sure there's someone out there who could build like a G-Wagon 6x6 bunk bed and charge $100,000 for it.
But then the kid will grow up to be an asshole.
You ever see a G-Wagon 6x6
Yeah, there was one on the Gold Rush last week.
It is fucking monstrous.
It's big.
Oh, you
really
went.
Big.
I went on day one, and we're not talking about it.
Get enough attention already on that?
Of course it was
good times. But just rewinding for a minute. Actually, I will say something about the Gold Rush. I had a wonderful time with Amber Blonigan, hanging out with her. She was great. But most importantly, I left my 1987 911 Targa at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel. I drove it there, and then I left with Amber, and we drove on day one, and I came back. And when I now, mind you, for the 3 days prior to the event, there's like Veyrons,
yeah.
G3RS, you know, every Lamborghini ever made. And so I came back, and the garage guys came out, and I gave them my ticket. And the guy looked at the ticket, and he says,
a real Porsche.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And the car comes out, and they just all talk. And they've driven every car. They're like, you see, it's a no power steering, so you for real driving.
Yeah. That guy, yeah. The guy, was it a large black man by any chance?
No, it's a bunch of Mexican guys.
Okay. At the Beverly Wilshire Hotel, when I pulled up for this Habitat for Humanity thing I went for with Hannah, the guy who took my car was a fucking fan and a half, and he was super excited about, and he left in the sea of Bentleys and bullshit in this thing, he left my fucking Focus RS parked right up front the entire night in a 3,000-person fucking benefit. And when we were done, there's a huge line, and I walked out, and my car was right there, and the guy just waved at me and threw me my fucking keys, and I drove right off. It was brilliant. Shout out to the Beverly Wilshire Valets.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Nice folks there.
What do you think about automotive-themed watches? Because I think they're cheesy as fuck.
You mean like when manufacturers brand a watch?
Yeah, like the Bentley Breitling shit and that, like, the Heuer Monaco, you know,
part
McQueen.
I think they're, it's all a bunch of fucking shit. And so is almost everything branded by a manufacturer that's not the car itself, and often the cars too.
Would you make,
you know, because the a real brand is if you have a brand, a real car brand, you don't even need your logo on it.
Yeah.
It breathes and smells. A kid walks up to it, and for the rest of his life, he knows every evolution of it, what it is without a logo. And if your brand needs that, like more than one, you failed.
Yeah. Would you make an exception maybe for like Porsche design stuff, because that's almost its own separate thing entirely?
Actually, I would if it's Porsche design stuff manufactured through like 1974.
People kept telling me that I should look at these vintage Porsche design watches.
Well, I know about the watches, but the glasses. And BMW had some stuff from the 70s and 80s that was very... It was like, even if they didn't make cars, if they had just made the clothes, it would be a thing. But today, you know that most car companies are just going to the same three or four white label guys and treating out the same junk. And it's shit. Fashion and, you know, has turned in on itself. So like brands like Vetements and Supreme are now collaborating, quote unquote, collaborating with everybody and putting their brand on anything. So the Supreme Porsche. So like brands literally are so far head up their asses in every sector that someone who has nothing to do with racing can roll in, put their brand on a Bell racing helmet and charge $3,000 and sell helmets. They're probably selling more helmets to people who will never race than people who actually race.
Just display helmets.
Mm-hmm. So you know, whatever. I mean,
says the guy with a mini on a T-shirt. Just kidding.
This was given to me by Hunziker.
That's a good shirt. This is a Hunziker. I like that shirt.
Hunziker sent me a bunch of shirts, here's a perfect example. I was at some car event, and there's this tent full of like groovy looking shirts. I'm like, walk up to the guy. I'm like, dude, your stuff looks just like Magnus Walker's, and he's like, Nicholas Hunziker, man, I've been doing this for a lot longer than that guy's been around. And then I started piecing together that everyone is basically doing the same design language. Deus Machina, Period Correct, Magnus. Well, I think Hunziker is doing his thing a lot longer. But he's
been around.
He's also a real artist. He's actually like a painter.
Yeah.
You know?
He's been sponsoring Hooniverse for the last, I don't know,
months. Deus has figured out fake vintage.
Fake.
I mean, in terms of making money, not in terms of making things I want to buy and wear.
I was in there, and I'm staying at my cousin's house across the street from their store, Santa Monica, and I go there every morning for coffee. I go there like six times a day because I didn't want to use the bathroom at my cousin's house because I'm a nice guy.
Their bathroom air vents to the outdoors.
Yes.
It's not connected to the store.
And so I go to the Deus, and I swear to you, I've never seen anyone buy one piece of clothing in that place.
Never.
Never.
So remember, I don't know if you remember this. It was about a year ago. They had, like, where's our supercharger? Right here. So we've got this supercharger pulley, right, that someone gave us that's a bottle opener. Mm-hmm. That's pretty fucking cool, actually. But so they have a thing that looked just like this, the supercharger pulley, except instead of the thing in the middle that opens the bottle, it's just a hollow tube, and it had matches standing in it. Okay, and the part of the supercharger pulley that would be covered by a belt had a diamond cut to it. Okay, and the point is you would take out one of the matches and then strike it on the diamond cut size of the super. Fundamentally, it was a metal pulley with diamond cut in it. And it wasn't made of fucking gold. It was aluminum or whatever this was. Okay. And they were charging $450 for a match holder.
I'm glad you bring that up because you know, as the as I've been relaunching the Pulitzer clothing line, I've been trying to determine who my market is. Is it like people I like
assholes
fans
who would buy that?
Or I'm trying to cut it both ways. Isn't working. Like I need to have like I have very expensive stuff and I have some cheaper stuff coming out too. But in the middle of all this, I was Supreme comes out with a Pulitzer jacket.
And
they,
really?
Yeah, they came out with a police motorcycle jacket that's $5,000. Says Pulitzer on it. So you know, you can imagine what, how I felt. I said,
yeah.
"Fuck these people." No, no, it wasn't Supreme. It was Vetements, which is the French dudes. The French dudes from Vetements, which is like basically another brand that just does collabs. They take like Department of Sanitation jackets. They take real Pulitzer shit from Germany, put their name on it, and charge $5,000. So what do you think I did? I went out to the art supply store, got a stencil. I started and with the word Vetements and spray painted my jacket. Oh, I left it in my car with their brand and then spray painted an X through it. I'm selling the stencil kit for $500. I'm also going to sell my jackets, my fake Pulitzer jackets with their logo on the back for $5,000.
Now, is that considered
trademark theft?
Yeah.
Well, some people ask me, are you collaborating with them?
Is it parody?
It's parody. It's parody. I think it's journalists. Right? I'm a journalist. It's parody. And I'm all, and they are insulting my brand. I insult them back. Who? No one owns Pulitzer.
Right.
It's an attitude. So I got a $40 camera case from like this from B&H or some store, and I decided to make that in my luggage box. I spray painted Vetements on it, X'd it out, and put it on my site for $3,000. People start emailing me, "Oh my god, is that really a collaboration?"
No. Have you seen the Balenciaga IKEA bag?
Yeah,
that's the really it's you know the IKEA blue bag.
Oh, I heard about this.
Basically, Balenciaga made one of those and is selling it for $1,800.
So I'm gonna do Supreme plungers.
That's so funny.
You know, whatever Supreme like you know.
That's hilarious.
Vomit bag. Whatever you want. I've got it. I don't care.
Dude, you make a limited supply of something, and somebody will be stupid enough to fucking buy it.
Yeah.
That's
so
great.
That's what I think of branded watches. Although, I like the vintage watches stuff you collect. Yeah, stuff, that's cool. But
I'm pretty shit at it. You know,
I have a great story about a fake. I used to have a huge collection of fakes. I have one nice one. My dad's tag.
That's lovely. Yeah.
And then I had to use a collection of fakes, and because my father had all these fakes, because he's always traveling to like weird exotic places, and you know, get ripped off. So one time, he's wearing—I didn't know this at the time—he's wearing this beautiful Rolex Presidential, and we have dinner at the house, and these executives from Peugeot come over. So that's the late '80s, and Peugeot was still in America.
Yeah.
And the guys came to the house, and I think it was like the vice president of exports, like a really major position, maybe bigger outside the U.S. than in the U.S. And I sit down, and the guy looks at my dad's watch. He's like, "Ah, Rolex Presidential." Now, my father, for all his success in life, was still a pretty modest man. We didn't live in a crazy house, and the family business was not that big. And you could see the guy's eyes light up. Like, well, how could our distributor in America, who we know what he makes, how could he afford this watch? And he was filled with jealousy. So you know, a year later, the guy comes back for dinner, and he's wearing a Rolex Presidential. And he's like, how do you like my watch? My dad's like, whatever. I don't really care about that. And he's like, well, where's yours? He's like, I don't know. He made a funny sign, just threw it out. and so a few years later, I went with Ezra Dyer to drive a Bentley GTC, like one of the first ones, a press car, from New York to
the racing to, FedEx.
Yeah, we were racing
right?
FedEx. And Bentley and Breitling had the partnership. So I ran down to Canal Street to buy a fake Breitling, and I found one. And wore it, and if you shook it, it sounded like a Christmas, like it sounded like Christmas ornaments in a bag before they go on the tree. and every picture from that drive, looking at the time, I'm holding it up in the car against like you know the other bright, and I got all these comments from Bentley. Oh, thanks so much. Oh, that's a great watch. How'd you get that watch? You know where that watch
that's
come
so
from?
Fucking funny.
So yeah,
they had all them fakes in Thailand and. Mm-hmm. I was being fairly critical of them because it was because they were like fakes, but they were like kind of almost, you know, they're close,
expensive fakes sometimes,
you know, like $400. Yeah. They weren't like $15 Chinatown fakes. They were like they looked like the real deal. Yeah. Like they had shit movements and all that crap, but like they mostly looked real and they were expensive. And I kind of like rolled my eyes at a few people and. They kind of shooed me away.
Wouldn't you like to send a message to some of your fans, Matt, and let them know that you are not what you buy?
No, I wouldn't.
And that's, and by the way, if you're going to need, if you have trouble with your balls, get some chassis.
I don't, I'm not about fakes. I'm about, they, the, there's a guy I follow on Instagram called Fake Watch Busta, who I love, who's fucking hilarious. Uh-huh. He has great lingo, which I love. And his hashtag is Act Your Wage, which I really like. Ooh. Yeah, it's good.
Or at least, if you like a fake, just don't try and pass it off as
a
real
get
thing.
Dope watches, pretty like a nice watch for not much money. You really can. It doesn't. It might not be a Breitling, but like,
yeah,
you,
I know. I've got a few. Watch.
Well, because the risk
still wear them.
The risk is the guy that kept renting that Lamborghini to date that chick and had to buy the Lamborghini to marry
my
the chick. Like,
story.
You know, if you're faking it the whole time, like you get
Gotham
called out.
Who rent the same Lambo every day, like every week?
What?
Because he met a chick and he told her it was his car.
Oh,
and rather than either fess up to it being a rental or telling the girl he sold it or anything else, when he asked her to marry him, he bought the car from Gotham. Like a used 04 Gallardo with 50,000 rental miles on it.
Wow.
Yeah. One of our favorite
stories. How'd that work out?
Still has the car. Last I heard, he still has the car.
But does he still have
Donnie in Jersey?
What about the
I
wife?
I know your secret. I don't know about the wife.
Wow.
I don't know. We got to take a break, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break, and we'll be back. And maybe we'll actually talk about cars on the flip side of this one.
Are you hiring? Do you know where to post your job to find the best candidates? ZipRecruiter is different. With ZipRecruiter, you can post your job to 100+ job sites with just one click. Then, their powerful technology efficiently matches the right people to your job better than anyone else. That's why ZipRecruiter is different. Unlike other job sites, ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. ZipRecruiter finds them. In fact, over 80% of jobs posted on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate in just 24 hours. No juggling emails or calls to your office. Simply screen, rate, and manage candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to find the most qualified job candidates with immediate results. And right now, listeners can post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free. That's right. Free 99. Just go to ziprecruiter.com/first. That's ziprecruiter.com/FIRST first. One more time, ziprecruiter.com/first. How about Auto Tempest? You know, here's what Auto Tempest is, right? If you're like me, when you're looking to buy a car online, or when you're looking to kill some time online, or when you're just going about your daily life, you are browsing a bunch of different car sites to find cars, whether it's Craigslist, eBay, Auto Trader, Cars.com, whatever. You never know which one of these sites is going to have the car you're looking for. AutoTempest.com will do all of that work for you. All you have to do is enter your search one time in one place on AutoTempest.com, and it will search all of the top used car sites at once, plus a bunch of the smaller ones. It's the easiest way to make sure you don't miss out on your ideal ride. And best of all, it is totally free to use. And look, even if you're not looking to buy a car right now, it's still fun to take a tour of what's out there. You know, you may find that certain sites consistently have prices listed higher or lower than other sites. You can use Auto Tempest to compare them all in one page. So take a look at the site. Let the folks at Auto Tempest know some feedback. Let them know what you think of it. They're trying to improve this site every day. Fill out that feedback form if you like. And if you like the site, share it around. If you know someone who's looking to buy a car, looking to sell a car, you could save them some time and help them find a good deal at AutoTempest.com. That's AutoTempest.com. Let's talk about AMSOIL. Many drivers today are looking to move beyond stock performance. AMSOIL brings that spirit to the engineering of their synthetic motor oil, combining top-tier synthetic technologies with unique additives. The result is an oil capable of protecting your engine up to 25,000 miles or 1 year in between oil changes. AMSOIL synthetic motor oil shields your engine from two of the biggest bumps in the road, wear and deposits. Wear on pistons and cams can lead to a host of issues, including loss of power. AMSOIL provides 75% more engine protection against horsepower loss and wear than required by an industry standard. Deposits on rings and pistons can lead to compression loss, compromising fuel economy and power. AMSOIL synthetic motor oil delivers piston cleanliness 93% above an industry standard. The proof isn't just academic. AMSOIL tests in the field and on the track in extreme conditions and using the most demanding high-performance engines available. Check out AMSOIL.com/smokingtire for more information. That's AMSOIL.com/smokingtire for more information. AMSOIL is devoted to protection. Harry's Razors, it's my favorite. I don't even use any of the major drugstore brands anymore. I have slowly, over the last couple years of reading these ads, switched from just reading the ad to, okay, using one product, to using two products, to switching to the blades and the handles and the shave cream. Now, I am rocking 100% Harry's shaving products. And since my girl Hannah got me this amazing shower shaving mirror, now I can save time by bringing all my Harry's razors in the shower with me and shave my whole face and head in the shower. It's money. For decades, these big razor companies that you see in the drugstores have been increasing their prices and taking it out of your pockets, people. And it's all for profit. The blades are not that much more expensive to make than they were, and yet the prices keep going up. So here's what happened. Jeff and Andy, two ordinary guys who were fed up with getting ripped off, they started Harry's to fix shaving. Harry's knew there was only one way to ensure quality, so they bought their own blade factory. They take less profit by not using stores as middlemen. They sell directly over the internet to you. It's half the price. $2 a blade compared to $4 or more you'll pay at the drugstore. And Harry's is so confident you'll love their blades, they're giving you their trial set for free. Just cover the $3 shipping and handling. That's right, free, $3 for shipping and handling. That's it. Your free trial set includes a weighted ergonomic handle, 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and a trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. $13 value for you to try for free. Just pay shipping. Stop messing around and get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your free trial offer. $13 of value for free. Just cover shipping. Go to harrys.com/tire. harrys.com/tire. One more time. harrys.com/tire to check it out. Last but not least, now live on Xbox One and Windows 10 for Forza Horizon 3 players, the Forza Horizon 3 Hot Wheels expansion. Horizon Festival and Hot Wheels have teamed up to create the ultimate playground for cars in the second major expansion for Forza Horizon 3. Basically, off the coast of Australia, there is now a chain of islands here to make your Hot Wheels fantasies come to life with loops, corkscrews, boost pads, high bank turns, half pipes, insane jumps, and even mechanical dinosaurs. What does that have to do with cars, mechanical dinosaurs? I don't know, but they're in there. Use the new stunt swap feature to modify stunt track sections and dare your friends to try them. Race 10 new cars, including Hot Wheels icons like the Twin Mill and Bone Shaker. Discover a new hidden barn find car, earn new Xbox Live achievements, and more. It's part of the expansion pass for $34.99 or available standalone for $19.99. This is available now on Xbox One and Windows 10. Head on over to ForzaMotorsport.net to learn more, to see the killer trailer. Follow along with us at TST Racing on Forza, and of course, Forza Motorsport and Forza Horizon 3 are the official racing simulators of the Smoking Tire podcast.
You know, the problem with McLaren is that there's so many models, and I can't tell them apart.
I can.
I mean, I can.
This new 720 looks nice.
If I pay attention, but it's like, ugh.
There's a lot of similarities. I have in my hand the newest automobile magazine.
And we are rolling, by the way.
I know. I have in my hand the newest automobile magazine, which has on page 65, an 8-page feature on Sarah Trimble.
Oh, really?
That's cool. We like Sarah Trimble.
Of course we do.
Yeah, we like her.
We like seeing, and which is actually mentioned on the cover.
That's good.
And as I flip through it, in the accoutrement section, there's a American-made Weiss field watch right there.
Is that the guy who makes his own movements?
Yeah. I'm going to visit him tomorrow.
That's quite
very
cool.
Very excited.
That's quite cool.
Very excited.
You said something earlier when you were talking about real watches, not branded car branded watches.
Yeah, yeah.
That actually did catch my attention, which is that there are only two companies in America that make watches, make their own movements.
Weiss and RGM.
And the other thing you said was a lot of luxury brands don't make, you know, or just get someone else's movements.
Yeah, yeah.
That it's like buying an exotic car with an LS1 motor.
That Zach said
right,
that.
Right. So, but that's nothing. But an LS1 motor is cool, but it's not.
An LS1 motor is fine, but are you going to pay $1 million for a car with an LS1 engine?
No.
You're not.
So what's the motor that goes
in a Pagani? That's why Hennessy only sold 8 Venom GTs.
Well, all right. So what about what goes in a Pagani? Isn't that a...
It's a V12 Mercedes.
It's an AMG V12.
Uh-huh.
But it is made only for Pagani. So that's like imagine having, GM making you an LS-based engine, but it only is for you.
So Koenigsegg.
Koenigsegg casts their own blocks now.
Now they do.
They do, yeah. In the beginning, they'd use Ford blocks. Mm-hmm. Now they make their own engines.
Only the finest Swedish metallurgy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much. But I for a while I didn't care so much about that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I get, the deeper down the rabbit hole, the more mm-hmm. you care. And Jack has really gotten me into the idea of an American, like I like the idea of making shit here.
Yeah.
Making shit here is great.
When I first met him, I didn't realize how either both how crazy he is, but how much I like him. He was stopping to get shoelaces, and he's like, "Well, where are these shoelaces made?"
Yeah, he gives a shit.
Yeah, he gave a shit way back in the day when people it wasn't even like a talking point.
I think there's hashtag branding,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then there's design,
mm-hmm.
and then there's the mechanics of it. But like with watches, like I think the movement's important. I bought a Shinola. I liked the idea of Shinola and Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the brand, and then the more I read about it, the more I learned that they're. Yeah, it's better than nothing. I mean, they're employing people in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
They're employing designers. They're employing retailers. They are assembling the watches there. But the idea of one dude in L.A. CNC machining parts and making a movement is pretty fucking cool.
All right, so would you pay a premium for a police jacket manufactured in the United States?
I do. First off, I do pay premiums for things that uh-huh. are made in America,
mm-hmm.
for sure. The New Balance shoes I buy are expensive. They're made in America. Look at what I buy in cars. Mm-hmm. When Americans make really nice, good cars, I tend to buy those.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I would.
Mm-hmm.
To a point. I mean, I wouldn't pay double market value for something that's mm-hmm. made in America, but in the case of this Weiss American issue field watch,
mm-hmm.
I think the price point is commensurate with the quality and the fact that it's made here. And
how do you feel about Panerai?
Dude, you know what's funny? I went into the Panerai store today.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
Panerai is a fairly dope
it's
watch.
It's an Italian military-styled watch, but yeah. It was, in fact, worn at one point by Italian like Navy divers.
Yeah.
When they were cheap and awesome.
Yeah, they were cheap and awesome.
They're and now not, they're expensive.
Now they're very expensive and still kind of awesome. Yeah. But
are they issued to Italian Navy divers today? I don't think
it.
So.
I highly doubt it. Although the Italian military drives G-Wagons as far as I know.
It's probably the one mil-spec item that got cheaper when it went to...
But
yeah.
So I go my doctor. I now have like insanely high blood pressure. That's my thing now.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go to this doctor that is in Beverly Hills, okay? And his office is literally a block and a half from like the watch block. So there's just really bad
yeah,
news. So uh-huh. it's like Jaeger LeCouture and Panerai and Rolex and all these stores are right next to each other. So if I go, I came back from shooting one takes and I was like a half hour early. So I just browsed. So I went into Panerai today. I don't really get it, Panerai. I don't get why they're as expensive as they are. They're nice.
I get it. I mean, I get it from a cosmetic standpoint, but you know, my position is you get a watch, and that's the watch you wear,
yeah.
and you should beat the shit out of it, whether it's expensive or not.
Yeah.
And that's the watch, and then every nick and scratch is like character.
Yeah, well, that's yeah. It's the guy who yeah. buys a LaFerrari and then dailies it for a decade.
I'm okay with that. In fact,
I'm okay with that.
I respect that more.
Hugely.
But, yeah, that's... I'm kind of offended, but when a guy buys like a Tactical combat knife, you know, Tactical, it's like Tactical. You know what I'm talking. You never heard
Tactical
that.
Tactical is a great term. Yeah. That's like athleisure.
Yeah,
but for
like,
men.
Yeah, like Tactical is like the guys who like buy like a lot of guns.
Yeah,
like the really designer guns.
Shavam. What?
Yeah, sorry. And designer anything, and then don't use it for the purpose. I mean, if you want to buy one as art and put it over there, I'm cool with that. But if you're buying
like
20,
like the giant fucking Barrett 50 cal. Yeah. Yeah. In your apartment.
You know, but if you're buying 20 or 30 of these things and occasionally you fire, I mean, it's.
I mean, yeah. I understand having multiple of things. Like, sure. I have multiple watches and multiple cars.
I have multiple bad cars.
Try and use them yeah. when I can.
Right.
At a certain point, but I went into fucking Vacheron Constantine.
Oh, fuck
how you
those people.
It?
Fuck those guys.
I don't know. I just walked in there today and I looked at this one watch and I went, holy hell. And I asked the lady, I was like, just. Killed. How much is that? Oh, this one is $300,000. What? What? What?
Yeah.
It was fucking
I mean, for $300,000, it needs not only to tell the time, but to tell the time where it teleports me.
No, you know?
Like, it has to be literally a time machine.
It better have a heartbeat for that much money. Yeah. What? Like, so I'm looking at the Panerai now. I've never seen before. They're very simple. They're nice, but like, why? I guess why do you not like them, and then why?
It's not that I don't like. No, it's not that I don't like them. I don't have a particular attachment to them.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Like a car, you know, a car is more as a thing. Like at something that's at that price point, you need to like feel it. You need to vibe. And I just like I don't.
Oh yeah,
I don't get it.
You know, would be worth a lot more to me is if a Panerai say, it was $5,000, but it came with a certificate that said this Panerai was worn by someone who killed 20 people and then was himself killed and it was retrieved from the bottom of the Adriatic.
Now
it has real value.
Baruth. It's got a story behind
Jack
it.
Jack Baruth sure. told me the greatest kind of like anecdote, or I guess, what's the word? Allegorical
story.
Tale. He said, he's like, yeah, you know, Alex, think about, you know, watches. He's like, imagine you buy a fake watch, but you thought it was real. And then one day you find out it was fake. The value drops, right, from $5,000 to, what, $50 in your mind. But up until then, it was worth $5,000. But then what if I told you that fake was built by a guy in Hong Kong who took great pride in manufacturing it and did the best possible job, maybe a better job building it than even the guy at the real one?
It's the Persang of watches.
Yeah. And that he fed... and raised and fed like 7 children on the income derived from building watches just like that one. Then suddenly the watch is valued again. He's like, so it really, and this is coming from Jack Baruth.
Yeah.
So he's like, really, you know, you have to decide what narrative is the one you want to believe, and beyond that, what you want to respect.
I think that's a great point. I read the article he wrote after having that conversation with you.
I'd love to read that article because I've been trying to remember
how he told it. It's on jackbaruth.com, and it was not for Road and Track.
Sometimes I'm afraid to go to that site.
No, it's fine. Yeah. It's fine. Just avoid between October and December of 2016. Besides that, you're all right. completely true. Like, what if you have a fake that has a crazy story behind it? And that, you know, like, right. There are, like... replica cars that have like the guy who built the Countach in his basement.
Yeah, that one's like worth that, more than any Countach.
Worth more than some real Countach.
Did he get it out of the basement?
Yeah, he had knocked down walls.
And what happened to the car?
I think he sold. Last I heard, he sold it.
That's cool.
I don't know what happened to it, but it did run and drive, and then I think
they had to excavate it and like cut one of the walls out of the basement to get it out there. Right?
Pretty fucking crazy.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Pretty wild.
It was supposed to make a movie. In fact, I think Davy Johnson was supposed to write the book about this guy. I don't know if it ever happened.
I don't know. I'd like to read that though. That sounds fun.
So, do you think that because next week I'm going to this Cannonball reunion, Connecticut,
Greenwich, Connecticut.
If anyone's listening, will this go up in time? No, this won't go up in time.
No.
Will go up after that weekend. I'm sorry.
So
you will have been at the Grand Cannonball.
Yeah.
Still talk about it.
I'm curious. Do you think a car that was on the real Cannonball Run in the old days is worth more?
Richard Rawlings sure did, didn't he? He bought that Jag. I mean, I think it has some added value. Certainly.
Do you think my Politzai M5 is worth more than market value?
It's either worth more or it's worth fucking peanuts. Right.
No, I think yours is because of your notoriety now and the car's notoriety and the movie and stuff. I mean, but yeah. I think if it was some guy's 355 that he ran, mm-hmm. then it wouldn't, because that organization doesn't have like the power of like a race, mm-hmm. yeah, as far as market goes.
I think on its own. An original Cannonball car, assuming there's documentation in Brock Yates's book
right.
of this being a real thing, and it, you know, the yeah. you know, like you go to the Pebble Beach auctions or whatever, they fucking drum up all kinds of random shit, and the stuff with stories, the stories stay with the car.
That's what marketing is. Like when you were talking about the watch thing and where did it come from and the guy with the kids and stuff, it's like marketing is trying to plant that in our brain. You know, like we might respect that story of that watch more, and a marketing company somewhere is like, how can we get people to believe that our new thing has that kind of clout?
There's like a producer's comedy to be written here about a bunch of over-the-hill car journalists who decide that they want to make some more money and start inventing narratives, backdating websites, yeah. like hacking internet Wayback Machine and creating all these crazy narratives for dead people who drove X, Y, and Z
hey,
to move.
I could easily see that shit happening. Yeah.
An easy comparison here is that like Budweiser in the UK and Ireland is considered a decent drink, mm-hmm. whereas Stella Artois is looked as redneck juice, mm-hmm. yeah. and it's reversed here. You know, it's yeah. the same kind of thing. It's just how you spin it mm-hmm. with the branding.
Speaking of brand, there was a great Anheuser-Busch commercial, I think, during the Super Bowl, where have you seen that one? Where they show this like German dude coming off the boat in like 19th century in New York, and like people are discriminating against him, and he's like homeless, and he's like saves a few cents to get a train to get like Ohio, and he's on like a steamship that sinks, and he like swims ashore and ends up in his bar, and he's sitting next to a really well dressed guy, and he's like, "What's your name?" He's like, "Johnny Anheuser. What about you?" He's like, "My name is Bush," and they shake hands. And it's like kind of beautiful.
Think there's anything to it?
No.
No. Okay. What it was,
it could be like the Dodge Brothers thing.
It was put out exactly as Trump was talking about all the wall shit and getting real aggressive with immigration. That's when they put it out.
Yeah.
It was pro-immigration.
Yeah, it was like, "Hey, idiots, you're not from this country
this
either."
This beer is really you wouldn't believe the beer we've got here. Well, piss in a bucket, it's the best.
I'm pro-immigration. In general.
Last I checked, none of our names were Tonto.
My family name changed several times.
What was your German last name?
König.
Really?
Yeah, my father was a German Jew. My mother was a daughter of a Wehrmacht officer. And my mom escaped from the communists. My dad escaped from the Nazis. So you better believe I believe in that.
You escaped from the
You better believe police. I believe in immigration, yeah. But actually, my dad did go on a date with a woman who was a member of the Communist Party in the 50s, and the FBI showed up at our off-family business like 20 years later.
Really?
Yeah, to ask questions.
Weird.
But going back to something you said earlier about your tour guides, we're talking about tour guides. I have an invitation for you. So I'm on the board of Automobility LA, part of the LA Auto Show, and I'm helping nominate speakers and also involve some of the events. And one of the things they asked me was whether I would like to be one of the tour guides, a celebrity tour guide, to lead like dignitaries through the auto show.
Oh God!
So I said, "Well, do I actually have to know anything about the cars?" Like, no, you can say whatever you want. So, and do you know anyone else who might want to be a guide? I'm like, I thought, Matt Farah. I mean, wouldn't it be hilarious if you could walk through and say, "This thing is fucking junk."
That could be hilarious.
Hilarious.
And I'm on board. If you're doing it, sign me up.
Absolutely.
Sign me up 100%.
I've always wanted to know if I just make it up, how long before...
Really long.
Yeah. How long before someone says, like, "Wait a second, that's not right."
Probably the whole show, I bet. It'd be great. I'm down. Yeah. Sign me up for that.
This is the BMW art car put together by Boris Yeltsin in 1976.
What else is going on at the Cannonball Run reunion? What have they gathered?
Well, it hasn't happened yet, but will have happened when this airs. I'm going to guess. I know they're going to have Judy Stropas, who was the real-life chick, hot chick in the Lambo.
Oh, really?
The real-life one with the zippers and the outfit. Yeah. And by the way, she is... I mean, this is not maybe out of line here. She's still very attractive. I just saw her, and she must be 70. And let me tell you,
was she the stunt driver person in the Lambo, or the other one? Was there like two?
I don't know.
No, the one who did the one that character in the movie is based
she's,
on.
She's very cool. Okay. She can kick the ass of almost any dude, and she's a very.
Did she actually do it in a Lambo? No,
I think so.
Really?
I'm not sure. But that's the story, the narrative. Anyway, narrative, and then they've got. What's her name? Pamela Yates is going to be there, and she was Brock Yates' widow, and she was in the past. You know, she was in the in the ambulance as Farrah Fawcett.
Yeah.
She's the real life Farrah Fawcett. And then a lot of the drivers in 79, and they're bringing their cars. And then
a lot of those guys still have their cars.
Yeah, a lot of guys have their cars. And I'm bringing the M5. I'm giving a little presentation. There's a guy named Jira Hoschek from Germany, whose, I think, father did it, I think. And he is doing a documentary about the Cannonball. And he's got a lot of interesting information people haven't heard before. Ooh. So, yeah.
I think a proper Cannonball car could have some added value. I mean, not 100% premium, but certainly 10, 15, 20% premium, maybe, sure.
Even the 1978 Jaguar XJS that won it?
Hard to tell, because when Richard bought that car, wasn't it fucking beat?
I don't know.
I think it was beat. I mean, ultimately, the car, if the premium, would he buy it for fucking $8,000 or something like that? Who knows if there's a premium on that?
Do you think at 50 years from now, cars that went on the Gumball that survived Riga to Mykonos run? It's like this McLaren made it from Riga to Mykonos.
No chance. No, that's really stupid.
So, which are any of these supercars that are sold today that plaster the streets of Vancouver and LA? Are any of them gonna be of any value?
Who the fuck knows? Dude, they make so many more of these things. None of them are really built to last. They make a lot. I mean, again, who knows? You know, we can't. Who knows? We all thought. None of us thought 355s would be worth anything, or you know. I don't think the $100,000 308 is going to last.
You don't think so?
Nah, I think people went a little crazy, and I think people are realizing that these cars aren't.
I think it's iconic.
The manual transmission 360s and 430s are softening a bit. The hype has died.
They were never that cool. They just were whatever. With their
manual 430s are pretty fucking.
But
sweet.
A 308 is iconic. I mean,
I suppose, but like
Magnum PI.
Does anyone under 50 give a fuck about Magnum PI?
No, and that's why the pre-war cars drop. Like interest goes with the generations, and then the generations either get like muscle car, the muscle car bubble.
Muscle cars are
boom,
done.
It goes up, yeah, and then the next generation takes over, and they deflate. It'll be the same thing.
Yeah, you want a fucking cheap car these days? You pick up a real nice Chevelle for fucking pennies.
Really?
Yeah. They're not worth. They're everywhere. They're so common. They're all over the place. Mm. Dude, go to Mecum, pick up someone's like $200,000 build for nothing.
You know Mecum. What word? I mean, I cannot stand is the word build. Like, oh, you gotta come check out my build. I'm like, did you actually forge that steel and build? I mean, literally, was there before you showed up? Was it just a pile of parts? Like,
I know
build.
What you mean. I know what you mean, but build. I know where and you're half joking. I know what you mean, though.
You know what I mean.
I don't care about anyone's project cars anymore unless I'm literally minutes from driving them. Mm-hmm. Then I care. Beyond that, dude, come by and check out my
my build.
Don't care. Don't care at all.
Yeah,
I care. You know what I care about now? Boats, watches, and race cars. That's what I care about right now. I don't care about your fucking Subaru with the upgraded turbo. I don't give a fuck anymore.
You are definitely on fire today, my friend.
I'm so inundated with this stuff. I just am like,
I would be if a guy said to me, check out how fast I can get a stock Subaru around the track faster than a dude who's done all these builds.
I'd be impressed.
That impresses me.
Yeah. You know what I drove today? I'll go positive for a minute. I drove today. A guy named Stuart brought me what must be one of the three or four cleanest Corrado VR6s on the planet.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
60,000 miles. The car looks like it just came off a fucking showroom floor. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. And it drove really good, too. Made all kinds of cool sounds. And it felt like it was built well and like a really nice thing. I'd never driven any Corrado before. Totally nice.
Mm-hmm.
Really good.
What color was it?
Purple. Silver.
Wow. It was purple, which is a super rare color that has some weird fucking German name. It was the SLC.
I like those either in the... They do those in a purple, or they do them in a super dark green that also looks really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it must have been the cleanest Corrado on the planet. It was it was really amazing, and the guy is trying to sell it. If you want to burn money on something...
My brother wants that. He loves that car.
Back to the point of it's just not that interesting to see these mods. I think we've also met like a saturation point where there's nothing new under the sun, because 20 years ago, when we were dicking around on the internet, like this stuff was all just kind of starting to trickle out into the internet at large and to everybody's kind of collective, you know, mind share of what's going on in the automotive world. Now we've seen it all 100 times over. Even if you're the kid that lives, you know, in the middle of Texas, you know, just dicking around on the internet in high school, you're aware that 3,000 turbo Camaros have been built in the last 2 years.
I think, you know, I used to subscribe to like Eurotuner and any car magazine. And when I saw the cars that got picked in those, I'd be like, wow, these must be the best cars on the planet selected for, you know, okay, they pick 5 cars to profile per month. Like, this is amazing. And then when the internet comes out, you realize way more people are building stuff like that than you thought. Mm-hmm. And and like you said, we see all of it. And eventually, if my job is to, you know, if I'm the soup Nazi and I make 10 kinds of soup every week, after 2 years, if someone's like, you got to come try my bisque, I'm like, no, I don't.
Yeah.
Well, it's like when you talk to like Ken over at Mountain or Rich Waitis or something like that, that built that import scene out here in the late 80s or early 90s. Like, they weren't like finding the best and the brightest. They were just like, hey, Larry, what are you building next month? And it was just their guy that down the street that they knew. And that was all it was. There wasn't anything special about them.
There's definitely cool shit out there. Yeah. But it's just when you've seen it all. Not that people shouldn't modify their cars or whatever. But when it comes to featuring, like I've said, I can't even count the number of times I've said no in the last month. I'm really narrowing it down.
Please give us an example of some of the please you've heard.
Oh, dude. I mean, so I need to, first off, I really need to stop posting my travel pictures of like where I am, because people really think that I would travel somewhere without having every hour of my day already planned out. So like, I got offered within 20 minutes or 30 minutes of landing in Jersey. I had multiple offers. I could have gone anywhere in that state and driven a Volkswagen GLI if I really wanted to. Anyway.
I mean, I'll put it on his tombstone. I could have been anywhere near the cemetery and driven a GLI, and then I did.
I mean, it's
your stuff. Tombstone should say, no, I won't try your casket.
It's just like, you know, everyone wants to think their own thing is special, right? And in most cases, it's just not. You know, it might be slightly different from this other one, but if you've driven the other one, you know that it's the same.
And everybody's buying the same 20, 30 parts that everybody else already bought.
Yeah. And so it just doesn't fucking matter.
You're a hot girl. You've seen a lot of dicks. You don't need more dick pics.
I don't like that tone. You're taking Chris.
And don't get me wrong. Like, there's
fuck you.
there's people. Like, I've said yes to a few things. Like, let's look at the farthest out. I'm just gonna pull up my calendar and look at what I have on like a way far out shoot day.
But when are you gonna review my Citroen SM?
See, that I really do need to do. So here, if I go, who just fucking blew up this room? Oh my god. Dude. Bro,
that's funny because I can't tell over here.
You know what it is? Is the fans moving it away from us, so I'm spared momentarily.
Directly to me.
When's the next shoot date?
The next one?
Or, yeah.
Oh, I don't know. Okay, so here, look. It's getting weird, right? So June 26th, I picked a random date.
Uh-huh.
I'm doing a 1985 Toyota MR2, which I've never supercharged, which I've never driven before. 1991 Mercedes SL500, 200,000 miles.
91?
91. Mm-hmm. Not, mine's an 01, so uh-huh. I've never done that. A Jaguar XJS with a manual gearbox from factory.
What year?
Very rare. I think it's a 91 or 92.
That I would like to see.
An E-Type.
Jesus, Alex, it just hit me, too.
Yeah, ooh, an fuck. E-Type 4.2. Some, like, a full-on race car Mustang and a wide-body stanced ND Miata.
Wait, so your demographics of the owners are moving older now. Some of these, I mean, an E-Type? I mean,
The guy who owns the XJS also owns the E-Type. He's bringing both.
How far out if I wanted you to do my car?
We could fit you in, but okay. Mostly I'm booking September right now.
Your car is amazing. You let me drive it at Pebble Beach, and it was the strangest, most interesting, fun thing I've probably ever driven.
Thank you.
The suspension makes no sense in all the sense, and the seats
are the greatest
I would have anywhere.
I should make a special time for you.
Great.
I'd appreciate that, because you know what I'm thinking.
Pump and dump?
Well, you do know that any test ride that isn't in a straight line that's of at least 20 miles is a waste of time in that car, because it's dangerous. You know.
I know. But where do we drive it? It's around L.A.
The ideal test drive is from the intersection of 405 and Sunset to Soho House and back.
I'm down with that.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
I've never been to Soho House Malibu. Would you like to take me?
Is this Soho House in Malibu?
Yeah, next to Nobu.
I didn't know that. Well, yeah. that's the drive from here.
If you can get into one Soho House, you can get in the other one, right?
Fuck, I'm a member.
Yeah, how do I become a member of Soho House?
You know, it's funny you should mention it, because I can write a recommendation letter. And I've been asked to write many recommendation letters, and there's nothing to say, because everybody wants to be a member is making a mistake. The night of the election, I was with two friends in London who were in tears over the election and asked me for a recommendation letter. And I love them so much, they had put me up, and I was like, you know, I'm going to write a real recommendation letter. And I was thinking of how bad my college application letters were, and I'm thinking of all the articles and books that have been written since then about how to write the world's best college application letter and who gets into Harvard and how and why. And so I decided to take those lessons and write a recommendation letter for these people. And it went something like this. Dear Soho House, I've never written a recommendation letter before because almost everyone who asks me is a scumbag, kind of like most of the people you've already got as members. But my friend now is not like that. Now, when I've been there in the past, I'm the kind of person who should have been kicked out. Let me tell you about the husband hunting, the hookers, the prostitutes, the bankers, the guy. And one time I saw a guy jump over the wall from the roof of the neighboring building to get in. I would have written him a letter, but he was arrested before I could get to talk to him. And there was even the guy who killed his girlfriend in the bathtub. I mean, you should have kicked him out. But hey, you know. But my friend, who's now married and has a daughter, she'll always pay her bill. She'll never insult the staff. She'll never do drugs there. She's an amazing human being. And, of course, I've grown up, too. And, you know, if you kick me out for having written this letter, you should just give her my membership. And like, hours later, I get a phone call from them saying that she's been accepted without an interview. And they've never received a letter that was so honest ever in history. But the truth is that, you know, it's a lot of families with kids, a lot of nice people. But when I first went there, you know, let me tell you, the people, you would not believe the quality of the watches.
<It's> like, a lot of people fell for the spiel.
I mean, everybody had a Vacheron Constantin. I mean,
there is someone who I know who is in our industry, yeah, who I will not name on the show, uh-huh, because I do think
Nicholas Frankel.
No, that's a really good guess. It's a really good guess, but no, it's not. It's not him, I promise, but it's a really good guess. Uh-huh. There's a person I won't name who my agent, Hans Schiff, is a member of Soho House.
Yes.
And he told me that there's a person in our industry who wrote a fake recommendation letter himself, for himself.
Yeah.
You, Zach Clapman, wrote your own recommendation letter and signed it with my agent's
name. I believe that's
name.
Called trumping.
But yeah. Wait a second. So from what email address did he submit the letter?
I don't know.
I submitted the letter from my email address direct to Soho House.
I'm guessing it was mailed. It was physically printed and mailed.
Who does that? That's a sign of a lie.
Someone who's trying to fraudulently get into Soho House.
Why didn't he just ask me?
It didn't go well. Let's just say Soho House does check their references.
If he had asked me to write a letter, I would have written a very honest letter saying, someone like that, because I know who it is actually the perfect person.
Because ironically,
he's like the talented Mr. Ripley of automotive.
Ironically, the person that is the person you describe,
yeah,
in your honest portion, yeah, of your letter.
The thing is, I've met some amazing people there and made some real friends there. And also people I never want to see again. People make me wish for the big one would hit strike LA.
In conclusion, yes, we will drive the Citroen SM up PCH to Soho House in Malibu.
If I know,
where we will dine, yeah, and you will recommend me. No, I don't.
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
I don't even think I want that.
You know something? It's a great place to use as an office.
Yeah,
I pay no rent. I have free Wi-Fi. And let me tell you, if you don't want to use the bathroom in the place you're staying and you would like anonymity, Soho House is the place for you.
And with that is our show.
Yeah, that's about time. That's about time.
Alex, we'll plan this one. The Smoking Tire Podcast is powered by Shout Engine. Get your own damn podcast at shoutengine.com. All you need is a microphone that's better than the shitty ones we have, internet that's better than the shitty internet we have, and a computer that's better than Chris's shitty one that crashes after we record a podcast for 47 minutes or more. You feel me, fools? I'll see you later.